You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda. And joining me at the top of the hour here, in hour number two, it is David Hobbs talking Formula One. And last week we were at Hungary, and not a surprise with Hamilton winning. Second place, though, we had Verstappen and then Bottas. So it didn't look like Red Bull was looking that great at the beginning of the weekend, did they?
Well, unfortunately, I'm torn here. I want to see Hamilton win his seventh world championship, which the way things are going at the moment, he will do. But on the other hand, obviously I want to see Honda do well, the Honda engine in the Red Bull chassis. And going into the year, after the test in Barcelona, you know, right back in February, things were looking pretty good. But when the chips are down and the races, you know, obviously in Austria 3 weeks ago and then Hungary last week, the Mercedes again seem to have come out way on top. And of course the next two races are next week and the week after at Silverstone, which again should suit the Honda even more because they have much longer straights and it's a much higher speed circuit. So Verstappen in some ways was a bit lucky to finish second, really, because Bottas made a horrible start. Mm-hmm. He jumped the gun and then stopped and then had to go again. So he lost about six places on the first lap. And regain them all except Verstappen. Verstappen, we were all thinking that Hungary would be the place for them to do well too, because it's a handling circuit. And the Red Bull's ace up its sleeve is always supposed to be its handling. Although even that doesn't seem to be much better than anybody else, quite honestly. Because the surprise of the season is what they call the pink Mercedes, which is the racing point cars, which everybody complaining are a copy of last year's Mercedes. And they certainly seem to be going extremely well. And Lance Stroll was right up there, on right near the front of the grid. And so they could be very strong at Silverstone.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, of course, his father, you know, bought an interest or a large interest in the team in that. And Lance Stroll, because he comes from means, gets a lot of negative feedback. But, I mean, the kid can drive.
Well, he certainly has had his moments. You know, he had that incredible finish at in Azerbaijan, 3 years ago, when he lost second place, literally at the line.
Right.
So he has put in some good performances, and he hasn't made many terrible mistakes either. And in fact, last weekend at Hungary, pretty much outpaced Perez, his teammate, most of the time. So, yeah, I mean, Lance Stroll looks good, because now we have another conspiracy theory, of course, and that is that Sebastian Vettel, who's leaving Ferrari,
right,
is now sniffing around the racing point, because it seems to be the next best thing. And obviously the big question is, who goes, Lance Stroll or
Sergio Perez?
Well, Sergio Perez, I think, puts a lot of money into that team as well, from Mexico. So, and of course he has been the de facto team leader. So everybody's making all sorts of conspiracy theories about those two.
You wonder if somehow Williams may play a part of this with Mercedes with the connection there. And Williams has actually shown some speed in qualifying, not so much in race results, but they picked up a bit of raw speed, it seems like, in the last couple of races.
Yes. As an example, Ferrari was slower at Hungary this year than they were last year. The Williams was about a second and a half quicker. So they are definitely improving. And of course, oh gosh, what's your name? George?
Yeah, George.
Him.
Yeah.
He is showing good speed in the wet, in the Austrian. George Russell. Young English guy, desperate to drive a Mercedes-Benz, and everybody was kind of thinking he might replace Bottas, but I think Bottas has shown that he'd be a tough guy to replace. So, but George Russell, I just hope he doesn't, you know, hang on that vine and and then peter out like so many young drivers do. Because he and Lando Norris are a couple of extraordinarily good Brits. But George Russell makes that Williams do pretty good. And so hopefully they will continue to improve.
You know, and there's always the rumors, too, how long does Mercedes stay in Formula One? So, and I mean, where what could we see in, like, 2 years? How much of that paddock could change? Are we going to, I mean, there's not many privateers. Could we see a return of some privateers? It's kind of interesting to see where if Mercedes leaves, Ferraris are always going to be around. And you got teams like Racing Point. Mercedes would probably still support, you know, Williams and Racing Point somehow. But you wonder what the face of Formula One is going to look in 2 years.
Well, I think you summed it up pretty well. I think there's a very good possibility that Mercedes will leave and will supply engines. Become an engine supplier. And the other, of course, major manufacturer who's hanging in the balance has got to be Renault, because their figures have been horrible. You know, they're losing money. And of course, the French are very protective of their unions and their labor force. And of course, what, 40-odd thousand people work at Renault in France. And if they're in a situation where they're going to have fire 20 or 30,000 people, 10 or 15,000 people, there'll be a lot of questions asked in French Parliament about, hey, hang on a minute, what about this Formula One we do, you know? I can see that coming a mile off.
Where's Guy Leger when you need him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. but they may remain as an engine supplier. Talk about Guy Leger. He and I used to get on very well, even though I couldn't speak a word of French and he couldn't speak a word of English, but we had some amicable conversations there, because he did a lot of endurance driving, so I met him a number of times at Le Mans and places like that, and he was a great guy. Very stocky for a racing driver. A bit like you, in a way. He was very tough, because he had been a French rugby player.
Oh, okay.
He was a professional rugby player, I think, at one stage of his life, but he was very successful in business, which allowed him to do so well in racing. Anyway, digressing a bit there.
Yes. So it'll be interesting to see, yeah, because we're down to 10 teams, and, you know, Formula One's in a place right now, you know, and they're trying to do cost controls, and you have teams like Ferrari complaining about it, but yet you still want, I mean, you don't want a grid of 14 cars in Formula One, do you?
No, and of course, this is bringing up by a circuitous route of what you said a couple of minutes ago. Will they allow, like they used to do, customer cars? So could Mercedes build like two cars themselves, and then two cars for Racing Point, and two cars for Williams, and Ferrari do the same? Formula One purists, of course, say this destroys the whole objective of Formula One, which is to construct your own car. Everything has got to be constructed by you. And in Ferrari's case, the engine too, and in Mercedes' case. But I think those old goals are just a little bit out of touch these days economically. And I think we may see a reversion to customer cars from manufacturers.
And, I mean, let's admit it. I mean, you look at, even in the 70s, there were a lot of customer cars. McLaren supplied cars, and March supplied a lot of cars in the 70s to Tyrrell. I mean, Tyrrell was going back and forth between Matra and March and other cars. So, I mean, there's been a precedence for that, hasn't there?
Oh, very definitely. And, of course, a lot of people look at the 70s as the golden era of Formula One. I'm not that sure that it was in particular myself. you know, everybody had a Cosworth engine, and Mrs. is getting in the wrong car.
That's why I put a golf sticker on my David Hobbs Honda for that reason.
So yeah, I mean, it would be a reversion to what a lot of people, as I say, talk of as the golden era in Formula One. I mean, I quite like the idea of people making their own car, but of course, if they put a price cap of like 100 or a cost cap of 170 million or 150 million or 100 million, kind of hard to produce from scratch a car and find an engine for 100 million. I mean, I know it sounds stupid to say that, but of course, when you go to Formula One races, I'm sure you've been to a number of Formula One races as you go with the press credential and you get into the inner paddock and you see the unbelievable money that these teams now spend on hospitality. I mean, the McLaren, the Ferrari, the Williams. I mean, Williams are sort of teetering on the brink. But I mean, their hospitality centre's as big as our house. And they drive these things all over Europe. They fold up and compact them down.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi. Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show here on 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm your host, the Mayor Mitch Ross. Steve Zocchi alongside as well. You heard Jeff Orlowski earlier in the program with Dennis Michelson, getting you caught up on the world of racing. Some slight technical difficulties there, but we will be rejoining Steve Zocchi live from Road America, his conversation with David Hobbs of David Hobbs Honda up on Green Bay Avenue up there in Glendale. Show is also brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway down there in Union Grove. Let's rejoin Steve Zocchi.
And we were talking about hospitality and, yeah, Williams. But, you know, for them to – you kind of have to walk the walk, I guess. If you're trying to bring in sponsors, you kind of have to show we're a professional team, don't you?
Well, absolutely. You're kind of stuck with it. And also the press. And the press, as we know, sometimes not that independent. And a lot of these press guys only go to the Formula One races to live it up for a weekend. I mean, the food they deliver at all of those hospitality suites is unbelievably high end. If you're having a private function home and you get a caterer and he says, well, it's going to be, you can have $25 a plate, $50 a plate, $100 a plate. Well, their food, I can tell you, is always on the $100 end of the plate cost. And they're packed all weekend, so their cost per weekend. They would spend more in a weekend now. A modern race team would spend more, for instance, in a weekend than someone like Team Lotus or the early McLaren did in the whole season, probably, for the whole season of racing, including travel.
Well, and if we would, let's say Racing Point would go with a Mercedes, let's say, you know, I mean, they're going to put their own aero kits on there, and they're going to work on the car, massage it as they go through the year anyways.
Absolutely, you know, I mean, when you get a customer car, then it's your car and you can do what the hell you like with it. It's not like Indy where you really can't change it much. And so that brings in another argument, you know, IndyCar racing in the last decade really, has been incredibly competitive. You know, you're having multiple winners per season and it doesn't take much to be off just a tad. And yet they are all Dallaras. They all come out of the factory basically the same. And Honda have their aero package and Chevrolet have their aero package. And you can't change it much. You can't just go and whack another wing on when you feel like it. And yet you see someone like Alexander Rossi last year was just tough as hell. I mean, won the race here at Road America at a canter. And this week, last week, you know, for the IndyCar race, just really... was hardly competitive. I mean, got on.
That was his last win too.
So, and that's all with the same car. So it does make it does bring an element of competition in, an element of competition from the driver point of view, and of course the engineer, the way they set the car up. So, an interesting concept that Formula One could be looking at that and thinking, well, you know, really, if you want competitive racing, you know, you can't do much better than IndyCar now. Maybe we should sort of go that route. But of course. Formula One has always staunchly been opposed to in any way, shape, or form copying anybody else.
Talking with David Hobbs and Formula One on the Final Inspection Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. And final question here, we have we're doing two in Silverstone this year. Now, in the past, you would have they would do two Grand Prix in England. One would be the British Grand Prix, one would be the European Grand Prix. That was kind of their way of getting away with that back in the day. They'd do a Brands Hatch and Silverstone, but we're doing two in a row in England. And as far as I know, that's a first, correct?
Absolutely. Same thing in Austria when they started. And two, as you say, at Silverstone, which, you know, I'm a member of the British Racing Drivers Club, have been now for 60 years, and they own Silverstone. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they are just really big-time hurting because you've got this vast, 800 or 900-acre facility where nothing has happened, since March. And it's a tough nut to swallow, crack, whatever you want to do. But of course, there still will be no spectators. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure the financial arrangement, but obviously I'm assuming that Liberty Media, who own Formula One, must be paying the racetracks out of their TV revenue to put these races on with no crowds. So again, a big difference to here where, Road America, the crowds are allowed in this weekend at the vintage races and then, of course, next weekend for IMSA. But in England, it's still, you can't have any spectators at sporting events. So it's going to be interesting, but judging on form so far, it should be a Mercedes weekend. It really would. I just can't see how it won't be.
Yeah, it certainly has been in the past with Hamilton just dominating that Grand Prix. Then we go to Spain, then a couple of my favorite tracks, Spa, and then Monza and Italy. And then were you surprised when they announced in Russia as the finale?
I was very surprised, but of course you go through now. Imola is going to have a race now, I believe.
Oh, did they add that? Okay.
They've just added it this week, I believe, Imola, because I've seen on the Twitter sphere a lot of great to be back at Imola, where they had a Formula One race for. But that was the same. That was the same as England. How Italy got two races. Right. They got the Italian Grand Prix at Monza.
That'll be the European Grand Prix.
Well, it'll be the European Grand Prix, or the, was it the San Marino?
San Marino, yeah.
And Bob Varsha and I, when we were doing the TV for ESPN 30 odd years ago, we went to San Marino, which is a principality set right in the middle of Italy there, and it was. It's very small. I mean, about the same size as Elkhart Lake and on a big hill. So I don't know what they'll call the race this year, but they'll be interesting to see the Formula One cars back there.
Certainly. Well, David, we certainly appreciate taking time out of your busy weekend here up at Road America for the WeatherTech Brian Redmond Vintage Weekend. And for those coming out tomorrow on Sunday, you'll be able to see David handing out some awards and trophies and whatnot. So come on out. And, of course, we have the Shadow is the featured mark. And we have Hall of Fame driver George Fulmer out there also. And it's a great way to see I think they have 10 Shadow racing cars to see them not only in the paddock but also in on the track too. So come on out to Road America this weekend. A lot of fun. And thank you, David, for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me again.
And make sure, don't forget, check out DavidHobbs.com for all the finest in new and used vehicles. Certified used Hondas too at DavidHobbs.com. And we'll be back after this on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and the aforementioned David Hobbs Honda.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi. Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. And we're up at Road America. It's the vintage weekend up here, one of our favorite weekends of the year. The chance for the fans to see a lot of the drivers of yesteryear and, of course, the cars of yesteryear. And this year is no exception. And every year they try and focus on a mark or a driver or a team or something. And this year, it's the famous shadow cars that were so popular in the 1970s. And joining me on the show, it is Doug Meyer, engine builder. Engine builder of the stars. No, seriously, though. Doug, tell us what your involvement was with shadow racing.
Well, interesting. I have to start with this. You just mentioned Great Lakes Dragway.
Okay.
I grew up in the north side of Chicago in the suburbs, and I was racing a 55 Chevy DeGasser.
That's awesome.
With a 301 and a Racer Brown roller in about 1966. As I graduated from high school.
Very good.
And so I was a gearhead my entire life and drove my parents nuts with model airplane fuel in the lawnmower and all sorts of other shenanigans. But then connection through connection, when the shadow team was formed, I was living in Stevens Point, Wisconsin,
okay,
where I went to college. And there was a school teacher there who had a Formula Ford, and he noticed my shiny Corvette, and he says, "You know how to work on cars?" I said, "Yes, sir, I do." And he said, "I have this Formula Ford. I need the gears changed. I don't know how to do it. Would you do it?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I don't know what that is, but sure." And turns out then that gentleman's name was Ted Johnson. He got hired by Don Nichols as a PR guy, and he fixed it up for me to have an interview. And I met Lee Muir, who, as you know, came from McLaren and was a supreme engine guru, and I became Lee's assistant once he came to trust me.
Okay, very good. And so what year are we talking about? Because there's a couple of iterations with Chattel early on, of course, with Peter Bryant and that group, and
exactly.
then later. So when did you start working for Chattel?
First car I touched was a 72 car.
Okay.
And that was at a test at Atlanta. And that was a tryout for me with Lee, as well as a tryout for the car, I guess. And I worked on the cars. I was an engine assembler, and I traveled with the team and was a trackside tuner and overnight engine rebuilder from 1972 through the 1975 Formula 5000 Dodge, which I worked on.
And, of course, you know, times are different. Back then, it certainly was a smaller crew at that time. How many people were on the crew at that time?
Well, there was Lee and I on engines. Lee was actually basically a team chief.
Mm-hmm.
And I did engines for him, everything he needed done. And there was Tony Connor, worked on, he lives in Chicago now, and he was a chief mechanic on one of the cars, and there would have been another chief mechanic on one of the other cars when there were two cars. Then each of them had a helper. And we had Tom Wirtz, which was he was sort of a tire guy. He and I both drove the transporter. So we would drive all night, drive all day, unload the cars, and go to work. Tony Connor lives in Chicago now, retired guy. Tom Wirtz went on to work for Penske, Ganassi. He was an IndyCar guy. I think he's an in the office guy now for one of the major teams.
Very good. Talking with Doug Meyer, who worked on the shadow racing teams of the 1970s, which is the feature mark this weekend up at Road America for the Brian Redman vintage weekend here. One of these can't-miss weekends. Something I'd like to say for this event, there's something for everybody out here. If you're in muscle cars or whatnot, you have the Trans Am cars, the Corvettes and Camaros and Mustangs and that, and then we have the ground thumpers, as they call them, the Can-Am cars. We have Formula cars out here, all sorts, and just a eclectic mix of cars. So we recommend you come on up here. They'll be up here today, Saturday, and also tomorrow, Sunday, up at Road America. And, you know, racing was certainly a different and, I guess, a little bit wilder back then, I guess you could say. Give me a good shadow story, maybe. Not necessarily even at the track, but maybe off the track, too, that's one of your favorites.
Well, let's see. You kind of caught me off guard there. There certainly were some parties, one of which James Hunt attended.
Oh, boy. Okay.
It's embellished and they're established in my psyche. That was in Palm Springs, so I can't go into too much detail on that. that was quite a good party. You're right. It was a little bit more amateurish, if I can use that phrase, because keep in mind that, for instance, for the transporter, for the truck, we were considered private coaches at the time. So there was no logging and DOT and stuff. And so Tom Wirtz and I both drove the big Kenworth transporter. And we would, he'd drive at night and I'd drive during the day.
Okay.
And we would go from Watkins Glen to Laguna Seca nonstop.
Wow.
Because we had, you know, 10 days apart races there, stuff like that. So that sort of thing was, all-nighters were apocryphal, but a reality. I mean, we worked overnight, all night. I remember one time we had a Chevy Vega parts car and I was going into town from the shop in Oak Grove Village, and I fell asleep at a red light. And pretty soon somebody was banging on the window. I was sound asleep because I'd worked like two nights
all the way through. The brain and the body tells you enough is enough, doesn't it, after a while?
Exactly right.
You know, those drives, it's not like today where you have the nice Freightliners or whatnot, you know, that are so comfortable. Those trucks weren't as nice as the tractor trailers they have today.
Well, it's interesting. The truck is a story in itself. When I started with the team, we had a cab over, underpowered tractor and a basic moving van trailer. And Don Nichols, being the showman that he was, after about a season of that, he said, "I want a big truck." And, you know, again, it goes to guys having multiple jobs. He said to me, he says, "Find me one of those trucks with the long nose." So I said, okay. And I found a Kenworth conventional downstate Illinois. It was reasonably priced. I told Don it looked like a good buy. So we bought that, and I drove it home from the dealership, never having driven one before, and brought it to Elk Grove Village. Painted it black, of course, immediately. And then another interesting part of that is the double-decker trailer that carried the team cars in 73. We had three cars, and because the turbo was one, and then there were two naturally aspirated cars. The turbo is a big story. But Don said, we need to carry three cars, and nobody had a transporter that would do that. So this, again, it's really points to the multiple jobs. I was screwing engines together, putting them on the dyno, doing that sort of thing, and Don says to me, "We got to figure this out. I want you to do it." So I had the idea that people that had the moving vans with the lift gates, I went to a moving van place that modified trailers, and I said, "How much can you put on one of those lift gates?" They said, "Well, hey, 3,000 pounds. I said, "Can you make it longer? Like 15 feet long?" And they said, "Why not?" So we actually commissioned the very first double-deck race car trailer that carried two Can-Am cars on the top level, one on the bottom, plus all the gear. And we showed up, I believe, mid-Ohio with it, and it set everybody buzzing. Nobody had ever seen a big semi open up and three Can-Am cars come out of it double-deck.
Wow.
And later that truck got some pretty wild paint on it. And everybody knew the Shadow truck, for sure.
And that was black, too, obviously.
It was all black until we got the changed the stripes to the red, orange, yellow for the Formula 5000 and forward.
Yeah, it's amazing because the marketing was in its infancy, but for someone like me who was a kid back in those days, I loved the Shadow, the old AFX slot cars.
Absolutely. Well, Don was a showman. Don Nichols is a very, very interesting man. He came out of, he's an American. He was stationed in World War II, and I don't know if it's apocryphal, but everybody used to say he was kind of a spy-ish kind of guy.
Sure.
He did work for the CIA or something. And when he was in Japan, he became the Goodyear race tire distributor for Japan,
which hooked him up.
And then when he came home, he started doing the race thing. And this is where the whole Shadow thing with the cape came in.
Oh, okay.
There's a little bit of history there where he was always kind of a funny character. He was very close-mouthed. He never told anybody what we were doing or what we were going to do. And he loved the showmanship side. I mean, he literally showed up to the races on more than one occasion with a black cape on. And it worked. You remember it, right?
Mm-hmm,
it worked. And it was really fun to be part of that. Make no mistake, he was a taskmaster. Stuff had to be there, like any good race team, had to be right, had to be on time, had to be reliable. He didn't suffer fools. If you were jerking around, you weren't around long. But he was a joy to work for. Also, I have to mention, really, Lee Muir, because Lee came from McLaren, where he worked with Tyler Alexander on the all-aluminum big blocks.
Yep.
And Chevrolet was very choosy about who got to have those engines. He brought that connection from McLaren to Shadow, and we became one of the chosen ones that got the Reynolds 390 blocks and the ability to machine and work on those, bore them and hone them and make them all work correctly with the iron-plated pistons. Lee was very, very much at the forefront. Lee was not a graduate engineer, but he was one of the most incredible natural engineers I've ever met, worked with. He just knew how to do stuff. If he didn't know how to do it, he figured out how to do it, and we got it done. He was a tremendous man to work for, and I miss having him around to talk to on occasion. He's quite something. He was quite something.
Well, it's going to be a neat weekend for those who have a chance coming up to Road America, to the WeatherTech International Challenge with Brian Redman. It's one of the biggest vintage events of the year on the calendar, and it's also with feature Mark with the Shadow Cars. It's a good opportunity to come out. There's also a new book by Pete Lyons, The Magnificent Machines, A Man of Mystery, Can-Am Formula, and Formula 5000 Car. Highly recommended book. Come on out here. George Falmer, who we're going to have on the show here today, will also be signing books, and it's just a neat event, and come on out. I think you'll certainly enjoy the event this weekend. And once again, we appreciate you coming on the show.
My pleasure. A lot of fun.
All right. Thank you. When we come back, we'll have more with the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi.
Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zotke. I'd like to thank our supporters at, of course, Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, and also David Hobbs Honda. And we're up at Road America, and it's the Vintage Weekend, of course, the WeatherTech Brian Redman Vintage Weekend. And this year, the feature mark is Shadow Racing Cars. And, of course, Shadow Racing Cars, a lot of listeners may remember back the old Can-Am days, and of course Formula One and Formula 5000, and many races up at Road America. And this weekend, there's probably a good almost 10 Shadow Racing Cars from the Can-Am days and Formula 5000 up here. And just, it's a neat event. And also they have Pete Lyons' new book on Shadow Racing Cars that you can get out here. And one of the former drivers is up here too, George Falmer. And we had George on the show a couple of years ago. And George, thanks for coming back on the show again.
Oh, it's always nice to go up to Road America. I have liked this place from the first day I came, which was back in 1965, when Cliff Tufte was on it.
Oh yeah, Cliff Tufte, of course, the man, yeah, and hands-on owner, and
yes, he was a good guy.
He was. I mean, you never hear a bad thing about him and his wife too. And they were local. They actually lived up here year round.
Yes,
so
they did.
So what were you running that first time up here in '65?
I brought my championship Lotus Porsche.
Okay.
Won the USSRC championship, so that was my first major championship. So.
Okay.
And I won it here. The last was the championship race that decided who's going to win the championship, and I won my class, and I won the championship. So it always meant a lot to me to come into Road America. Besides, it's probably the best racetrack in the country.
I've heard that from so many people, not only, of course,
Milwaukee Mile Racetrack as a racer's, racer's track, but as for an oval.
Too.
But also Road America, too. And it's funny, especially the European drivers all love it, too, because they always say it's the most European racetrack. And when Cliff Tufte and the others designed the racetrack, they kind of had that feel. They wanted it with the long straightaways, but yeah, the curves. And for a driver, it can be quite challenging, can it?
Well, it is challenging because there's a lot of turns in it, and it's fast, and it's got some pretty heavy braking areas and some pretty slow corners. So it demands a lot of out of the car and the driver to get around fast. You got to do a lot of different things. But it's just a nice racetrack, and it's fun to run, and I've always enjoyed it. And like I say, it's one of my favorites.
And you've raced, let's see here. You raced with the USSRC here, Trans Am, Can Am, Formula 5000.
Yes, all of those. I don't think I ran any stock car here, but I think I ran all the others. And
did you run single seat Can Am here?
No, I don't think so. I ran the real Can Am cars.
Right.
And I won here in 72 with the 917-10 Porsche with L&M sponsorship. So it's always been a good track for me, and I've always enjoyed racing on it. And it's just I still like coming here. I don't go off base very much anymore. it's traveling such a hassle.
Right, yep.
But chance to come to Road America and to visit with the people back here, and they're always great, and they're friendly, and the food's good, the brats are better.
Talking with George Fulmer up here at Road America, up here for the WeatherTech Brian Redman Vintage Weekend. If you get a chance, come on up here. We're up here today, Saturday, and also tomorrow, Sunday, all day. Come on out here. It's a great opportunity for the fans to do and listeners to do something this weekend. We're, of course, practicing social distancing and just using common sense with masks and that. But Road America, as we were saying, when we were a couple weeks ago for the IndyCar series, it's the optimum place to come out and see a race because it's so big and there's everybody can kind of space out. So come on up to Road America and enjoy the weather up here and enjoy some very, very cool cars. And George, your last race, vintage race, was here too, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
Isn't that McLaren?
I had a M8 McLaren, a Can-Am car, a big block in it, and we ran pretty good. I don't know if I'm
George, you spanked the field that day.
Is that what I did?
Yes, you did. I was here, and you just ran away and hid, and it was your, I think that was 12
years.
Less
traffic that way.
Yeah. That was about 10, 12 years ago, I think.
Yeah, at least.
And you said, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah, I think about that. It was right about the time I said, no more, I've got to do this anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had a fantastic career. I've had a lot of enjoyment. I've had some pain along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're going to race cars, you're going to have pain, so. But I'm still here, and it's always been fun, and I always like the fans, and having a chance to perform for them, it was rewarding.
And, of course, we have a lot of NASCAR fans, and some of the newer NASCAR fans may not be familiar that you drove for Bud Moore in the early 70s in the Torino. And we did an interview a few years ago, and I said, you know, what did you have the most fun with in the cars and everything? And you kind of wish you did a little more NASCAR running back then.
I've always had a fondness for the NASCAR. It's very competitive, and a lot of good cars and good drivers, so that raises your level and interest in having a chance to compete with the best of the field and, mm-hmm. you know, the best around. And I think some of the NASCAR guys are one of the best bunch of drivers to run against. They don't catch any cars, but they'll race you. And it's just good. It's the stock cars put on a good show for everybody, so it's fun to watch them.
You know, it's funny, there's been some criticism with Fernando Alonso going back to Formula One at, I think, at age 42. And you were actually a rookie in Formula One at age 40, weren't you?
Yeah, and I don't think that'll last very long because it's Formula One is a real hassle, and it's mm-hmm. gotten to be pretty, you know, if you're over 20, you don't even get a job. So.
Yeah.
But he could try it. I went because of the American team and the shadow and an American car. And so, and I had some good luck and I ran good. I was competitive, but our cars weren't quite up to the standard of some of the other teams. But I scored points my first race and I set out on the podium on my second race. So all in all, it was not a bad deal.
Well, George, we certainly appreciate you taking time out, and for the fans who want to come up here, excellent opportunity to get the Pete Lyons book and get it autographed by George.
Yes, I'm autographing both Saturday and Sunday, and that'll be an opportunity to buy a brand new book. It just came off the press, and in fact, I don't think you can get it anywhere else but here for this weekend, anyhow. And it's a nice book. Pete's a great writer, and he's been in motorsports probably is longer than I have, and he's a good guy and a very meticulous writer, so
he certainly is.
He what he writes is usually the real story.
Yeah.
All right, there he is, George Fulmer, with Steve Zotke up at Road America. Race is going on up there this weekend. That's going to do it for us here on the Final Inspection Show. I want to thank David Hobbs Honda up in Glendale, also the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Coming up next on The Fan, it'll be the Bayview Shade and Blind postgame show at the conclusion of the Brewers and the Cubs from Wrigley Field. Brewers up 3-1 right now. First and third for the Cubs. Two outs. They just got Victor Caratini in a rundown. So, Tim Allen, we'll take your calls on the Bayview Shade and Blind postgame show. Coming up after the last pitch, you make the switch right back here to 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.